When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
All right, so Father's Day is coming up, and I'm already thinking, how can I spoil Alan? Because he never does anything for himself. So I'm thinking maybe a golf outing, or how about a new wardrobe maybe? And maybe not all black. That's why I'm so excited about this new partnership. JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. This exclusive limited-time men's collection with a laid-back, down-home vibe is perfect to gift the father figure in your life. This Father's Day, iHeartRadio and JCPenney want to celebrate the father figure in your life by gifting a $1,000 Visa gift card to put towards their favorite activity, like a round of golf, concert tickets, fishing trip, etc., and a $500 JCPenney gift card to snag some of the exclusive pieces from the Walker Hayes for JCPenney collection. Enter now to make this the best Father's Day ever for the father figure in your life at iHeartRadio.com/Father's Day Sweepstakes. JCPenney, make it count.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Hey, listen.
Welcome to One Upsmanship, the video game podcast where we grapple vainly for meaning like it's the top of a ladder you just can't go down. That's right. It's our Half-Life episode. I'm Michael Swaim, and with me is...
the infuriated, like you hit me with a crowbar, Adam Ganser.
No.
Head crab of your dreams.
Surprise, surprise. The guy with the red beard and glasses is defensive of Half-Life. Here we go.
I want everyone to know I had never played this game until like 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Never played it.
Fair.
Because I never owned a PC.
Mm-hmm.
It was never on a console. So, and now I do own a PC and I played it. And we're going to talk
about
that.
That's right. Synonymous with Valve, the company that runs Steam, a PC gaming milestone, legend, myth.
Yeah.
Yeah, Half-Life, very important game in the history of PC gaming specifically, and very excited. Thank you, iHeart, for helping hook Adam up with a PC so that we can expand
Absolutely.
To cover PC-only games like Half-Life, and we thought we'd kick it off with a banger. So to more PC games
the whole
in the future.
Idea. Yeah, that was the whole idea.
We're starting with HL. And let's start by passing a checkpoint, which means we get a chapter heading. On a rail, blast pit, something like that, which is, I think, was fairly fresh in gaming, man. On-screen chyrons declaring what chapter you're in. It felt highly cinematic for the time.
There's a lot of little flourishes like that that are brand new because of this
that
game.
That they either invented or owned in a way that had not been owned before, including chapter breaks. So they're the Tarantino of gaming. Good job, Valve. And that brings
us... They probably don't hate that.
That brings us to Tell Me Like I'm 8-Bit. How about I take this one, Adam?
How about you do?
Okay.
Yeah, how about you do?
So this is a segment where we describe the game in a nutshell to someone who's just wandering in like a child into the middle of a movie theater, Donnie. Someone who doesn't know much about the game at all. And as I said, Half-Life is a legendary PC game made by Valve, who runs Steam and Portal, of course, another notable Valve game. But down to Half-Life itself, it sort of came about in the Doom Wolfenstein era, the real early days of FPS, and is notable in many regards, but mainly for innovation, I guess. It added a bunch of new things that sort of FPSs had not been doing. It felt more complex, and it had more diegetic storytelling. So by that, I mean Half-Life is you play a scientist who's involved in a secret government experiment that goes wrong, and you end up fighting mutants, demons, whatever you want to call them, things from another dimension, right? And you, the military betrays you and you have to kill them too because they're trying to wipe you out. And it becomes an action movie and you save the day and there's other details. But I could almost easily, with several tweaks, be describing Doom, right? You accidentally open a portal to another dimension. It's just hell.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. But it's in the execution, and that's what Half-Life is famous for, the execution, and for basically being a game that made other game developers and designers go, oh, well, we're doing that from now on. I can't believe we weren't doing that before. And that means things like being the first game where you had a use button that you could use on people, and they would follow you and help you. Like if you encounter a security guard, you can say, follow me, shoot that monster while I go over here. One of the, if not the first game to have that functionality. You can walk up to a scientist and use them and they'll go, oh, hi, Gordon. And they'll inject you with health and like boost some of your health. And I'm saying you have to appreciate this is at a point in gaming so early on that there are basically four scientists that you see dozens of times in this game. They're not even individual character models, right? There's the Einstein-looking scientist.
Pretty much.
And there's the 50s dad-looking scientist, like the Powerpuff Girls dad-looking scientist. And that's it.
Yeah.
And
there is a standard woman scientist, I believe.
There's a standard female scientist, one, right? The security guards are all the same guy.
Yeah, like, pretty much.
And so I'm saying, in some ways, it's rudimentary, and that only highlights how innovative it is for the time, really, I think. And I know that's a little bit of an opinion, but it's kind of considered video game consensus. So I feel like it fits into the nutshell in that it's considered a highly innovative and seminal first-person shooter, but it basically boils down to killing some aliens until you're done. Half-Life.
Wow. Wow, what a summary. I don't know if you mentioned this, but it is also a first-person shooter.
I said first-person shooter like 20 times. I'm gonna make sure,
okay, all right, forgive me. I don't know
he
if you said
listen.
That phrase.
He zones out when I talk.
Fair. I don't. It's that's not action. True. I don't.
It had opening credits on screen while you're playing, like while you're actively controlling the character.
I really think
that's fresh. It's like they saw Doom and they were like, oh, we can add to this.
Which they totally did.
Brings us to another checkpoint, because that was basically a nutshell fused with a rant, like a head crab rant, jumped on it and morphed it. So may as well pass another checkpoint and enter the rant section, where we get to give more of our opinion on the game as a personal opinion, which may or may not differ from my opinion in the overview, because I was trying to describe what video game history says about Half-Life. This is where I say what I think, but not yet, because it's Adam's turn.
Fair enough. Yeah, certainly I think you've pretty well summarized the critical consensus.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Okay, player one Adam Ganser plugging in. So as I said, I'd never played Half-Life until 2 weeks ago. So I made a decision. And that decision is I decided to play the fan rebuild of this game, Black Mesa, which when I researched it was pretty faithful to the original with some changes. I'll say everything they changed I did not like, by the way. So that tells you that there's something to this profession of being a game designer, even though God bless those people for doing the remake.
Wait.
And the reason
can you phrase that? Everything that they touched
hold on.
You didn't like? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, everything they changed from the original, every change they made that tweaked the original, particularly in length, I was frustrated by it. Thank you for clarifying that. So the reason I did that is because I wanted to have something closer to what it would have been like to play the game when it came out. Because I went and watched a bunch of videos of Half-Life, and it was like, I remember this. I remember seeing the trailers and stuff. But I think when you had first played this game, it was like such a leap forward in visuals and in storytelling that is impossible to replicate. So I made that decision. I'm telling that up front because I know some people had fucking conniption about it when I was talking about it on my stream. So That's my preface. Hey, this game's really great. It's really fun. It's still really well paced. It has some great storytelling. It has some great gun selection. It's very much a Die Hard, which is a great way to start a franchise. You know, I love Die Hards, and this is one of them. In that you're stuck in a place and you can't get out, and it's revealing story and complexity as it goes. It's very interesting to sort of have the question of what's going on with this place slowly being answered as time goes on. It's too long, and it's certainly too long in the Black Mesa expansion, but I think it's too long just in general. Like, it suffers from that thing in 90s games when it's like doesn't know when to say that's enough. You know, just I think some games can be better when they're more focused and shorter. There's a reason Call of Duty campaigns are basically like 8 hours. This is double that, maybe more. With the Black Mesa stuff, it's like almost triple that. And it just felt like this is a little bit of a slog. The stuff they added to the alien piece at the end, in general was not my favorite. And having gone back and read some reactions, I can see that I was not alone in that. That just felt kind of tacked on and sort of like, what are we even doing here? Like, what are we fighting here? I will say that I think the experience of not knowing what you're going to get from this game and then sort of all hell breaking loose and trying to survive and get an explanation is a thing video games have taken from this and copied ad nauseum. Like, this is the Casablanca of that idea, and first-person shooters love using that idea. They've used it to varying effects. I think you could even argue stuff like the No Russian level in Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 is a sort of, like, extrapolation of that idea, right? Where it's like, what if you sort of diegetically reverse things for the audience? And like, oh, that's a surprise, and then you go on with it, right? That sort of started here, and it's cool. It's awesome. Can't take away from it. I also see how games like certainly Halo and BioShock were heavily influenced by this. It feels like a point in the journey. It feels like you can see the head crabs were like a precursor to the flood. You can see all that, right? So awesome. It was first. It's still very fun to play. It's a great first-person shooter. That's my rant.
Player 2, Michael Swain, plugging up, plugging out, plugging in, plugging on. I need more time to think of my opinion. No, I'm fine. I agree with what my esteemed colleague has said. I think I appreciate it more. It's interesting to play it. I had played it before on PC roundabout when it came out, or maybe even like 5 years after, but that's still a long ago at this point. I played the OG stripped down original one that's available on Steam with no mods or anything for this.
That's cool.
And it reminded me of the good old days. It didn't feel much different. I don't know if they've changed much other than just up-resing it a little bit, but I was less impressed by the story or enthralled by the story, let's say, than I had been when I was a kid, because there's two reasons. One, even the fact that at the end, the third act is, what if you go to the alien dimension? Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, that is Doom. What if you go to hell was the big twist. So I was like, oh, it owes even more. It's part of that flow even more than I understood. Because as a kid, my honest impression, which is funny, was that Half-Life was like the artsy intelligentsia version of Doom and had a more sophisticated story. And as an adult, I'm like, well, let's calm down. It's not that sophisticated. It's just a diehard with aliens and shit. But that's great. So the degree to which... Oh, and then the second thing is, of course, that it ends with... punting. It ends with the idea of just buckle your butts because part two will answer all this shit. And then part two famously said, this is, as we know now, part two took forever to come out. And then they famously sort of is structured as like, this is going to be an ongoing thing now where every 6 months we'll release part of the story. And then they just stopped doing that. It's kind of a series that doesn't have a conclusion, and I can't really give your end much credit if it's a punt and then a mid-season cancellation. So I'm a huge story dude, and the story has sort of lost its luster in my eyes. That said, Now that I'm an adult, I have a much more sophisticated understanding of ludonarrative and of game design than I did when I actually played Half-Life the first time. And boy, I can't stop talking about how seminal the game is and how incredibly elegant the design is, to the point that my knocks against it, and I also think it's too long, and I can point out specific ways where I'm like, it's not just too long, it's that you have a bunch of brilliant people. And it's seminal in ways I didn't even recognize. Like, there are, you can see the seeds of Portal forming in Half-Life.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, I just felt you don't need, there's elements that it's like, yes, you have a bunch of brilliant people who have so many game design innovations. You don't need to cram them all into one sack. And it did feel like every single thing they possibly could have thought of, down to the tiniest detail. And then in some ways it was great. For example, late in the game, there's a, not even a puzzle, but an activity you do by blowing open a fence using mortar strikes or air strikes that you call in using a grid system by pressing a button to set up the X axis and then the Y axis and then the bomb drops. And the idea of doing that, that's such a simple thing, but doing it at the time that this game came out, I can project myself back in time to that time and go, man, my mind would have been blown by the fact, like, all Duke Nukem can do is whistle at a stripper. Like, in this, you can set up an X and Y axis and call in a fucking airstrike. How sick is that? But there's also a bad element to that. And by that, I mean things like the bugs that are a living weapon that you can release, but they also hurt you. And I'm like, okay, I get what you were trying to do, but no one's going to use that. I'll use my assault rifle. Thank you very much.
That's right.
And then all the long jump puzzles are bullshit. And I'm like, I get it. You wanted to try out long jumping mechanics. Save it for the next game, which will be called Portal, which will be fucking great. You don't need to worry about your long jump mechanics. You don't need to test. You don't need to come to open mic night and like do your hour long special that slays, but also test 15 minutes of new material for your next thing. And I feel like this has a bit of that about it towards the end game, where Valve is like an ongoing concern where they're just trying shit. And it's great. It's like an unstoppable font of innovation that everyone rips off ad nauseum, like you said. But at the same time, Half-Life itself is a little bloated. I think it's fair to say it's a little bloated.
Yeah.
That's my only real knock against it. And the story is way dumber than I thought it was. Not egregiously dumb, just straightforward, big, loud, and dumb in the way that Die Hard is and a lot of stuff I like, you know. It's just like, yeah, kill the aliens. Oh, there's a mysterious government man. Well, what's his deal? You don't know. That's what's mysterious. All right, great. I mean, I get it. X-Files. I like X-Files.
Okay.
Okay,
wonderful. Yeah. Well, let's take a little break from this and come back fully refreshed, shields up, and fully healthed, so we can tackle our next horrifying segment, Game On. But we'll do that right after this.
The truth is out there.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On a network that covers more roads than any other carrier. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls. Finish up that presentation or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Love that theme. Like that theme, Gansey.
Yeah, I know it. Mm-hmm. Our boy Kenny Wood did it, and boy is he a hero good. For me. Yeah, he's
it's
real
easy
good.
To remember because it rhymes. We're talking Half-Life. We're passing another checkpoint, and that means it's game on, the portion of the podcast where we're allowed to bicker and argue and say whatever we want in any order we want. And if you try
sure
and
are.
Stop Adam from doing that, you and I will have words off mic.
We're going to get really mad.
Yeah.
Hey, did you know that Half-Life was conceived by a team of six, development-wise? There was they called
wow.
it the Cabal, and they had a team of six people that did all the ideation and development, which may contribute to that feeling you have of trying to jam all these ideas in.
And everyone's
you know?
Showcasing their best work in
yes.
almost to a fault. Yeah.
Yes. And in fact, the reason they did this Cabal thing is they didn't feel they had a designer that could head it up who was adequate to the task, because they were very serious about trying to respond to the first-person shooter genre, specifically Doom and Quake.
This is what I've learned about Valve is, as a company over their entire history, and this maybe this is Gabe Newell's thing, famously the president or whatever his title is, but maybe it's just the culture there, or it's multiple key people there, but Valve is almost always, they're the James Cameron of development. They are not only producing a product, they want their product to lead the way in the medium and
yes.
invent new technology, like necessarily
yes.
invent new technology in order to create the product. And the product almost becomes a technological showcase. Half-Life Alyx is like a State of the Union address on here's everything VR can do, and we put it in a game so you could see what a AAA VR game will be like someday. And this is probably the only one you'll get for now, but this
That's
is
right.
what they're going to be like. And Half-Life indeed was like, boom, and everyone was like, okay, give us 3 years and we'll start cannibalizing parts of this and making games. It gives everyone all the pieces to make all the great games that come after. It's truly remarkable.
They were also founded by two former Microsoft employees, mm-hmm. which I think is a part of why they think this way.
Yeah.
Right? In 1996, incidentally, this game came out in 1998. So, like, they were a brand fucking new company when they came out with Half-Life.
Yeah, and
like
they're thinking of it
new.
As a medium already. Like, how do we
right.
become part leaders in this medium?
Right, and so, like, I just want to shout out the ambition, especially because they did it. Like, not only is it ambition, like, good ideas, guys. It's like good, it's ambition,
yeah.
and they did it. Wow, you know, like, it's a startling achievement with a lot of hubris that they managed to do it. That's impressive to me.
Dude, Valve is, I know you know this, but it's just weird to pause and reflect, like, as someone who remembers and loved when Sega was, I was like, they're doing it. They're software and hardware,
yeah,
baby.
Yeah.
Valve is, the Steam Deck is a hit right now, right? So Valve is software, hardware, and platform, because Steam. It's
yeah.
nuts. They're really slaying. Quietly.
Well, they're not doing a lot of software anymore.
That's
and
true.
Certainly, people are mad about that. And I get why, because there's no finished story to Half-Life.
Right.
It just sort of it's sort of events that keep going and getting weirder.
Alyx is great, though. I want to cover it when we get you set
yes,
up.
Yes. So, actually, Alyx and Half-Life 2 are all three of these games deserve to be covered for different reasons. And I would say, well, I'll save this comment until we get to Keep or Delete, because we're gonna have to talk about that a little bit there. One thing that kind of gets lost, I think, now is, like, this game was sort of a little bit edgy tone-wise for its time, and edgy in the sense that it was very grounded. Like, instead of being, like, sort of winking at you the way that Doom and Quake do, it was pretty grounded. It, you know, and so
aspired to be cinematic for the first time. Yeah.
It, which means that the experience here felt, and I put this in quotes, real. Like it was like these things were really happening. And that was part of the charm of it, I would say. Which it's funny because like some of that stuff doesn't really translate now, particularly the way that the scientists are doesn't translate now because they're all definitely like the nerds on the football team. Like that's the vibe.
Hello, Gordon.
Yeah. Just like, oh, God, the aliens are biting me. Like they're just such dorks. You know what I mean? It's like that's what they thought was a grounded scientist in 1998.
Remember, it like harken back to a time when you could, because now every FPS has a thing where, oh, your gun just doesn't fire in this area if you point at a friendly,
right.
Or you drop your weapon out of frame if you point at a friendly. In this game, straight up, like, oh, Gordon, everyone's going to the surface, but I think they're crazy. No, headshot, headshot.
Yep, exactly. Like,
you can just take these motherfuckers out.
They
love it.
In fact, they gleefully continue to give you opportunities to do that. Yeah. Like it's very much like a, like it's halfway between like Doom and Grand Theft Auto, which is a pure vice playground.
Right.
Like this game more sort of nudges you like he's annoying, right? Just cap him. You don't need to listen to him, you know? And that's kind of fun. But also sometimes they like some of the things that happen to those poor security guards, pretty rough. It's like, dude, that sucks, bro. Like out of a horror movie, rough, and it's done pretty well. I thought a lot of it really works. Like the cinematic moments really work.
No, it's the pure density of scripted moments too.
Yeah,
like you see, and all this stuff, of course, has been done. I'm playing through Dead Space 2 right now because we're going to cover that in the future. And man, you couldn't talk about a game that has its own things going on, but owes a lot to the Casablanca first-person shooters.
Yes, it does.
In the sense that, like, you know, you try to use an elevator, it falls down the shaft and explodes. That kind of shit didn't happen at this time in gaming. You understand the headcrab process, which is just a ripoff of Alien, because you witness it through glass. You know, a guy, it sneaks up on a guy, and you go like, oh no, it's sneaking up on him. And before you can do anything, it grabs his head, and he turns into one of the stalker mutants or whatever the normal zomboids are called. And you're
Dead Space has exactly that moment several
exactly
times.
Those guys. Yeah. But everything, those moments never took over control from you. That's what was notable at the time, and of course is much more common now, is those cinematic moments, you would still control the player. And furthermore, I forgot the sheer number of them. Like, every few seconds, and this is the thing that I thought really led to Portal in an interesting way, is this was one of the first games where they diegetically showed, like, I forget that on your first day as you're going to the physics barrel for the accident to happen,
right,
stuff is breaking down and there's people going like, why isn't this working, or what's going on with this, or like hitting their computer. And I'm like, just like in Portal, the brilliant slow realization that the system you're being presented itself is breaking down. They're obsessed with that and they execute it really well time and again, but they are not above iterating on themselves. And I think Portal, that you can see that thought line here of like, you know what's fun? You present the user with a system, and then you subtly imply that that system is, you know, tearing at the seams.
I think it's the problem that all artists have. Like, it's like when you watch a bunch of Kubrick films back to back, you see like the through lines.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, you could see like, oh, he was kind of always working toward A Clockwork Orange, and then oh, he was kind of always working toward The Shining. You know what I mean? Like, you could see how all those things sort of came from the same place and are sort of small changes on a continuum. I think Valve is the same. They have themes that they're interested in exploring, and they have found lots of cool different ways to do it. But yeah, it's always a breaking down, you know, iterative system, an Orwellian system that you're trying to escape every time. You know, like, that's the deal. That's okay. You know, this is the first one that did that, and it sure works.
Iconic opening sequence.
I remember it from having seen my friend play it on his computer. Like, it was like, whoa, and I just never got a chance to play because I didn't have a computer. Mm-hmm. And it was like, but I remembered it. And I got to say, there's a couple moments like that in this game, actually. One of the other ones is the first time you realize, oh, the government's hunting you. They have to kill you. Like, that's a really
and then the
cool
Halo
moment.
Halo slash Doom music kicks in for the first time in the game. You get heavy metal. And
yes,
what's funny is it's just awesome to track. Like, that is a response to the way Doom deployed music and the kind of music chosen. And Halo is also in this through line. Like, you can see in the future, Halo will have music that's not the same, but respects the existence
but iterative.
Of this. Yeah.
Yeah. It's much clearer to me that Halo was another step forward because of this game than it was.
Yeah. And
than,
games
than
like Marathon and System Shock as well, I think.
No doubt.
For tone.
This, you can see that this is a huge step forward for the genre. And also, I played Half-Life 2, by the way, just because I thought it might come up.
I saw
up.
That. Yeah.
And I do want to talk about that game. Not today, but in general. That game is responding to Halo in some ways. You know what I mean? Like you can see the dialogue between these franchises.
It's always a state of the union with them. Yeah.
And it's awesome. You know, I love that. I think it's so cool that they're like, you know, they're competing with each other. That's what I want. Yeah, man. Outdo each other. I'm into that shit, man. And not copying, competing. And I love that shit. I do agree with you, though, that your general synopsis of what is the plot really is pretty like...
Diehard aliens.
Yeah, kind of. And it's not that iterative. It's not that transformative compared to Doom. It's really more tone and execution that to set this apart from Doom.
Doom is more like it was so edgy at the time because that still was the Satanic Panic D&D thing was. I mean, I hear it's coming back now a little bit, but to just unabashedly. It was edgier then than it does seem now to unabashedly go like, our game's metal. It takes place in hell. It was like, oh boy, that was an eyebrow raiser when we were kids for sure.
But Doom feels a lot more like a carnival shooter. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's sort of in between like shooting at a carnival game and like going through a traumatic experience. Half-Life is a lot further down the going through a traumatic experience continuum.
Needlessly, and Alex is maybe the scariest gaming experience I've ever had by virtue of the fact that it is VR, high-end VR, right? It's just scary for something to suddenly be behind you and for that to be realistic feeling.
Yeah.
And that's so easy, but true. Head crabs in VR are a nightmare. It's terrifying. And even in this rudimentary form, I was jerking in my seat. Like, oh, God, okay, all right, there was another one around the corner. Whew, they got me. And it presages stuff like Dead Space, Resident Evil, you know, the 4 and beyond. And
it's the seed. Yeah.
Yeah, it's both. It's interesting because Half-Life also, you forget how, at least in the jump scare department, how horror heavy it is. It's able to innovate in how FPSs can be immersive, and it also innovates in how you do jump scares in 3D space, period. They're interested in both those things. And then with Portal, they did the same thing with traversal. They're like, why can't traversal be this now? You're like, God damn.
Well, I was going to say, they have some pretty decent traversal puzzles in this game. And how do I actually get through some logic puzzle stuff, like where are the switches, how do they work, like not a ton of it, certainly not like Portal or The Witness or something like that, but like just the tiniest little glaze of it from time to time, you'd have to figure out a little puzzle.
Love the moment conceptually in the level called On a Rail when you realize the way to proceed is to go off the rail.
Right. Of course.
My God. Right? Okay, of course. That's so smart.
Well, and also they had a lot more stuff where like, okay, you have to plunge down to the bottom of this core and swim through this now open gate and flip this switch and then, you know, oh, you have to find this ladder that's tucked away. Like there's just a lot more of that than there was in any Doom I remember.
Agreed. That's what I'm saying is you tackle such a wider variety of, they said, we see you, Doom. That's it. They were the second adopters. They're the wave of people who got so excited about a thing that's possible now that they go, oh, shit, give me that. You could do this and this and this with that. You could do this and this with that. And it's funny because moment to moment, they're impressing you with all the things. They open your eyes to what video games can be in many ways. And I still get that excitement. I still can go back in my head and be like, man, and you hadn't seen that before. That was so cool. But there are points where it just feels like they gave up. Like their diegetic storytelling, for example, they have lines, colored lines on the walls to teach you how to get around the first area. And therefore, you don't need a map or a radar or a mini map, right? That's a decision to increase immersion. And to this day, it's a decision that a lot of developers think long and hard about in some take,
right,
where they're like, we want minimal HUD. And Half-Life was like, we want minimal HUD. That was one of the first games to think about UI in that way. And then later, there's a puzzle where you have to find a storm drain, and there's a sign that looks like Wile E. Coyote put it up that just says
storm drain with an arrow. Storm drain.
And I'm like, ah, they stopped trying. Or this level, this level got rushed out or whatever. I don't know. There's parts where they seem overextended sometimes.
They didn't have like the years of history of how to guide the player. So like you do end up sort of running around not sure where to go next a bunch in this game.
Mm-hmm.
A thing that has basically been eliminated in AAA games now. Like, that doesn't really happen anymore. They do it with lighting. They do it with structural design. They do it with, like, even fucking, like, markers. Just go here. You know what I mean? Half-Life didn't want to do any of that, or maybe hadn't thought of all
for
of that.
For immersion.
Yeah.
Or they hadn't thought of it yet.
They might not have thought of it. And so they didn't. So sometimes you don't know where to go, and that's frustrating.
No minimap, no quest markers, nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a surprising experience because you're so used to that not being a thing anymore. And then you're just like, okay, well, this is the thing we learned, you know, that we don't have to do anymore.
Surprisingly elegant level design for that purpose, and something that was striking to me, because it does make you think about level design more because you're forced to, because you do get lost. The level design is surprisingly linear. Like, I kept finding myself thinking, this is not like GoldenEye, where you get to know your way around and then you use that to your advantage.
Right. You learn
this
it.
This is like, we're quickly moving through here. We're quickly moving through here. You're always going forward. And I just think that's interesting that FPS has kind of fallen to those two buckets. Like at Destiny, you'll revisit the same space and it'll be good because you'll know that already. This is like, new thing. Very much like the Indiana Jones ride at Disneyland, you know, like a curated experience that goes forward. In some sense, it's always forward.
Yeah, it doesn't have the stop and appreciate it thing that a lot of first-person shooters have installed in their game.
Right.
Like you said, Destiny. Destiny does this all the time. Like, check out this shit, right? Yeah. Or like, I honestly, Call of Duty does it. Like, call it, like, you'll be in a battle. Mm. Like, for instance, in Black Ops 1, they have that mission where you're in that famous battle in Vietnam, which has a level design problem, by the way. And there's this, you come over a vista, and it's like, oh my god, look at this fight! Like, look at this battle. This game kind of got rid of a lot of that. It doesn't really have as much. It's like, go to this tube, now crawl in this sewer, now find this ladder, now jump around this core, now jump in this river and sink underneath these blades. Like, there's just a lot of that stuff, and they're not as much like, look how cool it looks, even though it does look cool. You know, and I kind of love that about it. They feel more disposable, the environments, even though they look great.
And it's also a hallmark of games that I do consider more horror or scare based. And so that's another reason I think now consciously, because I've dredged it up, but originally subconsciously, I started to realize, oh, wait a minute, this is kind of a spoopy game, or like I'm kind of scared right now.
Yeah.
I feel tension. And I think it's because we're always moving forward. We're trying to escape. People are betraying us. Oh, they're against us too. I just wanted help. Oh, they're shooting at us. And the monsters, dude, some of the monsters are truly the dogs with the lamprey heads.
Yeah, those are crazy.
A sheath of skin, just an iris of skin just blinks open and closed and creates sonic waves. It's like, that's disgusting to imagine the real version of that in my head. You know, that's just creepy.
Honestly, the first...
Yeah,
the first like 6 hours of bad guys, including the first few troopers that you run into, are all very satisfying and very creepy. And then it starts to get into closer to Doom. Like, some of the baddies are more Doom-based, like the soldiers from the other dimension and
or
stuff.
Or the final boss is just, like, a big baby with a brain or whatever.
Yeah, which was, like, that felt very, like, what? That didn't seem like where we were leading to, but okay. By the way, in Black Mesa...
Zernax.
In Black Mesa, you should know, they felt beholden to, like, explain why the aliens that you fight in the first game are not, you're not fighting them in the second game.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have a ton of, maybe 5 hours of level where you, like, encounter the story of that I'm pretty sure was not in the original Half-Life.
Oh, because you're fighting the Combine, not the...
Yes, yeah. Correct.
Completely right, different
like,
plot.
What? Yeah. It was very
And what's funny is, but they don't even try to obscure the fact that it's an Aliens ripoff in the sense that
right.
Gordon is put in stasis and brought back, which is exactly what happens to Ripley, bro.
Absolutely. By the way, like I haven't played Half-Life, Alex, but I've played most of Half-Life now. I'm kind of surprised people care about Gordon Freeman. Like, I'm surprised that he's a character that we connected to
He's
at
a
all.
Cool character design. He's not anything.
I guess.
Yeah.
You never see it in the game, and he says nothing. Like, he's less
he's
than
primal.
The Master Chief.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
yeah.
true. He never talks.
Yeah. He's less than Doom Guy.
But Sonic doesn't talk. I didn't know Sonic spoke, meaning this, you know, when just the game existed.
But you see him.
I know
but
that there's comics
him.
And cartoons. I loved Sonic. I think there's something about just design itself. The glasses, the crowbar, it's cool. His suit.
The crowbar is awesome. Yeah, everything about
this.
The game is cool.
He's more
just
formed
nothing.
Than the Doom protagonist, or even Wolfenstein guy, really.
Definitely more than Wolfenstein if you don't include the newer versions.
That's what I mean. I mean the old ones that it was actually competing with at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, the Doom guy's nothing either.
But yeah, like, less than Master Chief, you're right.
Way less.
We don't. I'll tell you what we know about him. Wait, I have this. He's 27, ladies.
Right.
He's a PhD from MIT in theoretical physics. He was just hired as a research associate in the Anomalous Materials Laboratory, clearance level 3. His administrative sponsor is classified, and his disaster response priority is discretionary. What else do you need, dude?
Neat. No, you're right. I should have been fully engaged in his arc based on that information.
And he's got to go fast.
This is not even a criticism. It's more just like I think it says something about how much people love this game that they care about him.
Totally.
Because he's absolutely nothing. Alex, on the other hand, from Half-Life 2, that's a character you can care about. 100%. You can get way invested in her because they give you stuff to care about with her.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, this game still feels good to play, right? Didn't you feel good playing it? Did
felt
you
good
enjoy playing
it? I yeah. think the honestly, it made me think of Bloodborne. Way the sound design, only in one particular way, not game design or mechanics, just the sound design, the way they produce the sounds, the sound and movement. Very clean, very sharp,
awesome.
Very
yeah.
highly polished and produced.
Yeah.
Not every
Iconic.
Game should be that or would work that way, but the sound and feel was way more frantic than I remembered. It reminded me of old school Doom and Quake and stuff, which makes sense. But the feel of the crowbar, the speed with which you go, crowbar.
Yeah. It's great.
It was like, oh yeah, I forgot how crisp everything is, and the sound design. This was one of the first games where I remember the sound design being so useful, and this remains true in so many horror games, because you'd go, oh, one of those dogs is in this room because I'm hearing bow, bow, you know what I mean, and the little like
yeah.
the slurping sound that would make you go, I gotta look at the ceiling for those fucking dildos with
those
their
guys.
Tongues.
Oh
yeah.
Yeah. They're great bad guys. Yeah, I was gonna comment on it, so I'm glad you did. The sound design here is significant in gaming. Like
yeah.
there are just sounds that are like, oh yeah, that's part of our history. Like I think every time the electric sound happens when you like get like
yeah.
More shield, it's like, yep. That's totally memorable. Also, there's some weapons here that are just fucking awesome. Like the Ecto Ray that you get at the end. I forgot what they actually called it. But that weapon rules. This version of a rocket launcher is really cool, where you can like guide it by like basically laser painting. You know, that was super cool.
I never understood that.
Oh, that's funny. Man, you were having a hard time then.
I always wondered why the rockets curved and missed when I aimed perfectly. It's because they follow your cursor. I did not know that. That's funny.
I want to make sure that's not an invention of Black Mesa. It's in Half-Life 2, so it might be Black Mesa might have added that. But yeah, it was like an alt-fire thing for the rocket launcher, and I was like, I'm doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I ended up using the assault rifle as
almost exclusively
as my workhorse weapon, which is why I also appreciate, and this is what I mean by they think of it as a systematized medium, clearly. They, for the last few levels, they almost completely take away all the assault rifle ammunition to force to diversify and start using laser weapons and shit. Because they're like, come on, try some of the shit we made. Which I just think shows an awareness and a thorough testing of your product. That's really impressive, right? It's a good game.
I mean, and they had cool ideas that didn't totally pan out. Like, I would say the mines didn't super pan out, and the grenades. And I think after Halo, it was like, oh, we have to rethink how
there's
to do that.
There's more weapons than there need to be.
Yeah, well, the crossbow was cool, but didn't play as well as you wanted it to. The gluon gun, by the way, is the name of the one I was thinking of. The hornet gun, it was like hard to like figure. It didn't feel like it was killing things as much as
powerful
you wanted
enough.
It to feel.
Yeah.
Yeah, it felt like if only Turok Dinosaur Hunter had got its hands on that weapon and like done something crazy with it, it would have been awesome.
I liked that they played with, it felt like one of the first, because I don't remember old school Doom ammo ever being scarce. It felt like one of the first games to play with the tension of ammo scarcity being really ratcheted up.
It's
like
that,
I constantly needed ammo and health, constantly.
And they also went to the trouble of always justifying why there is ammo and health where you find it. Like you found it because a guy died.
Fucking everywhere, right.
Yeah, yeah. But like, you know, Doom doesn't care about that. And Quake doesn't care about that. So it's cool that they went to those lengths. Like, you can't have health if somebody didn't die or if you're not by a medical station. So like, there has to be one here. It's cool.
And the fact that like the medical stations are limited and don't even have 100 in them. Right. They don't even have a full
50
health in
is
them.
All you get.
It's great.
Yeah,
I love it.
That's right.
Really
I also
good
love
at,
it.
And that's a balance that, you know, these types of horror survival games still play with. How much do we shortchange you?
I totally agree. Now, that said, before we take our final break here, I wanted to say, I do think you have to, in hindsight, we have to dock this game a little bit for not having finished the story.
Oh, I thought you were going to say subtitles. That's what I was going to bring up. It's cool how far accessibility has come. This game doesn't have a subtitles option.
Yeah, that was annoying. I found that frustrating. Yeah. But like, but really, like, it's so dumb that this whole G-Man piece of the story that is cool, right? And it's very much out of X-Files, right? Like, it's a he's a really interesting character.
It's kind of cool. It's not good. That's my spicy take for the episode.
It's like, what?
The G-Man is dumb and bad.
Yeah, like, it's a cool idea, but it's ultimately bad if it doesn't pay off, which it doesn't, because they didn't make a Half-Life 3.
Well, an old white man in a black suit who talks creepily, sure, that could be something cool, but it isn't in this case. It's nothing.
Well, I would have accepted it as an interesting twist at the end of Half-Life, because like, I can go back in time to 1998 and realize nobody was doing this, and that's a cool idea.
Right.
But they had a responsibility, I think, as storytellers to pay that off, and they didn't. So now
or
I
it's
think
that
well,
the
it's
government
bad.
Is in league with the aliens, I guess, which
but
is
they didn't
you
say
know,
that.
Probably all it signifies. But do they say that in 2 though?
I don't think so. G-Man still operates outside of all the events, it seems.
That's right. He appears just at the end again.
And it's
right?
like, and at the beginning, and it's like, well, what does it mean?
He's like, who is
what
G-Man?
Does this mean?
Give it to me. Yeah.
Like,
give
stop
me the
it.
Story.
It's been like 20 years. What are you
the
doing?
The only other thing I could dock it for is I encountered, and I do think we should bring this up when it happens, very old game. I just downloaded it off Steam. I don't know who's curating the code, but Steam is Valve's platform. So, and it's like, you know,
it
one
ought
of
to
their
work.
First groundbreaking game. It ought to work.
Yeah.
I encountered a game-breaking bug, which was an elevator that every time I entered, I just exploded and died. And I screwed with it for like an hour before finally looking it up. And it turns out a bunch of people had the exact same problem. And you can solve it by like crouching and ducking continuously while the elevator functions. I just think we should mention stuff like that because it's like, well, A, if someone encounters that bug, that's what you do. And B, That's notable that if I didn't have the internet, I couldn't finish the game. I think that's notable. Yeah.
That would have been a really bad experience.
Back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, games are complex and, you know, okay, but yeah, it should be fixed by now. Right? That's insane. They're still making money on this game. They have to be.
Right.
So, what say we take a little break and then come back and talk Keep or Delete? Sound good? I didn't get my crowbar.
That was my head crab noise.
Yeah, I got it.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On a network that covers more roads than any other carrier. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls. Finish up that presentation or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Oh, and we're back, but now we're on the alien planet Zen somehow, and what the hell were we doing out here? Yeah, it's not Zen enough is my spicy take on that.
We're taking the fight to them, Adam.
We sure are.
They're going to be in for a surprise because Incineroar fights for us now.
We always bring him.
Because
he keeps fighting for us. We sure do. Hey, so let's pass our final checkpoint.
Okay.
And talk a little keep or delete here. I'm not in a hurry to end this episode because I wanted to bring up one major problem here. So this is a philosophical question about the hard drive, ultimately. How much do we care about these iterations on the specific first-person shooter genre? Because a lot of the seminal games really are seminal in that genre. Like, I'm noticing that is like, oh, yeah, there's like maybe 8 games that are first person shooters that are all kind of on this continuum and advancing in the same way. Like, I would say Doom and probably Quake and certainly Half-Life and Halo. And then later on, Half-Life 2, Halo 2, and then maybe BioShock. And you know what I mean? So we're getting into this place where it's like, well, yeah, they're all leaps forward. Which of the leaps forward deserve to be enshrined? This game made me think about that. Forgive me.
It made me think about it way too much, Adam, and I have a new meta theory of all unified gaming.
Okay, I'm great.
Which is that I do think because it's just a simulation of a 3D environment from the cameras in your head, right? The cameras in your eye. It's the root-er genre where it makes sense because it's primordially trying to represent your actual human experience, your cameras in your head.
Right.
Right. They're called your balls.
Okay.
Called your little peepers. And because of that, we tend to see most innovations there first there. And I feel like every other genre of gaming is a restriction on either the way time is handled, the way traversal is handled, and where the camera lives. But everything comes from going like, so it's like an FPS because the engine is basically an FPS. And you know, like when you build an Unreal, you're looking at a little stage and you're pretending you're standing there and you build stuff.
Right.
And then to test it, you put the camera in the head of the character and look from that vantage.
And what's that like? Yeah.
And then if you go, I want it to be an RPG instead, what do? You move the camera up, you change the way time is chunked up, and you make certain traversal rules. And that makes it an RPG now. Or, you know, whatever. So you skin any genre that way. So I feel like I'm super torn because on the one hand, I like almost every genre that's derivative of FPS better. Like I like RPGs better than FPS.
Right.
I like RTS better than FPS. I think FPS is fine. It's middle of the pack for me for video game genres. But dang, it seems if I never know how much to balance in historical import.
That has to weigh in heavily.
Heavily? How heavily?
Well, so I'm not telling you what you should vote. I'm saying, like, if we were going to keep this, it would have to be largely because of that, is what I was trying to say.
Right.
Like, not because it's bad, but because it's like, yeah, okay, but BioShock is a better execution of a lot of these ideas, and certainly Dishonored. And that franchise, which we haven't even talked about. Like, so, meaning we've passed the things that were great about this. I would say there's Calls of Duty that are much better in almost every way.
But it's also just a cup of tea thing. Like, I like 3D platformers more than FPS. I like almost anything more than FPS.
And the hard drive does have to be our hard drive. It's not about pleasing other people. I get that. I'm pointing it out here because there's a bunch of games that we haven't covered that we're going to have some debates about, well, do we really want to keep both of them? Do we want to keep this, if that? Like, that's going to become part of this conversation. Like, spoilers, Half-Life 2 is pretty good, and it's better than this, you know, as a game. It's a better game than this. Also Halo 2 is better than Halo 1, and, you know, on and on. And we can debate all that. Dishonored as a franchise is, I think, more creative in a lot of ways than this.
Right,
Half-Life.
But by definition, those wouldn't exist without this. So exactly, it's just the cornerstone one.
That's exactly the issue. I'm sort of laying the groundwork for. I think it's okay in this segment to do a little bit of horse trading, in as much as like you have to sort of outline. I'm thinking about the larger drive, and I'm not including it for this reason. You know, which we scaled that back in our last hard drive episode. So I'm just putting it out there and letting the fans hear it because I think it helps us understand what is the aim of this segment. Any
Whatever
concerns
helps
about
you
that?
Sleep at night, man.
Nothing helps me sleep after having played Half-Life because those head crabs scare the living shit out of me.
There is a point
terrifying.
In Lambda Core where the head crabs just keep appearing and coming.
Oh my God.
Where you're like, this is not scary. This is frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, this game is occasionally frustrating because it's not scaled correctly and not seasoned with years of this genre. This genre is not even 5 years old when this came out, really.
Right.
Which is wild. You know, we've been waiting four times that amount for Half-Life 3. So, yeah. Anyway, Mike, you want to go first? You want me to go first? What do you think?
It's really tough. You go first.
Okay, it is really tough. I'm going to keep it. I think I don't know how. It's just too important. And honestly, it's still really fun to play. It's still a great game to play. I just played it. And it's like, wow, this is really fun. The tone of it's great. The sound design is great. I see how it's important. I remember how it changed all of video games at the time. I remember my friends playing it. By the way, I've played a lot of Counter-Strike, which is a mod of this game. You know, Counter-Strike on its own is one of the biggest games ever, and it's just a mod of this game. I see the seeds of Portal in it, one of the best games ever. I see the seeds of Halo in it, one of the best franchises ever. I see the seeds of so many games I love. Call of Duty. I see the seeds of Call of Duty in this game, a little bit more abstractly, but they're still there. Yeah, I just don't know. I have to keep it, and I'm willing to have a conversation with you some other day about how many first-person shooters we're going to fucking keep, man. I understand that debate, and I'm willing to have it some other day, but for now I'm keeping Half-Life.
Yeah, I guess I'll keep it, but I genuinely feel really like sad and bummed out about it.
Really? You like this game, but you like it.
No, but I'll break the sequence. It's okay. This might air in a different order, but we just covered Outer Wilds.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to me how that shook out. I'm saying if that didn't shake out the way it shook out, I probably would have happily kept this, but the way it went down, I'm now like, but we're keeping this? Like, really? But okay. I mean, I do think it qualifies as a keep, despite the fact it just objectively does, even though I'm the guy who, on the spectrum of things, doesn't weight historical importance as much, and I don't care about FPSs, but I'm still like, but if you're going to keep any, I would keep this. I would keep this over Halo.
Yeah, I wouldn't,
and that
but
may
I
become
that.
A decision someday.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, totally.
For sheer innovation. But if you're just saying it makes it on because it's so innovative, Outer Wilds.
Yeah, but this is more fun to play. I mean, way more
so
fun to play.
I do want a horse trade, but yeah. I guess that's what I'm saying. So I have to keep it because if I deleted it, that would just be horse trading for emotional reasons.
But
otherwise, I would have kept it.
We
in
do.
A vacuum.
Again, I am offering for you and for the audience members who are like, come on, man, if that's how you feel about it. There is a discussion about I don't want one genre to be overrepresented. And honestly, I think in the medium, there
well,
are still
weird,
a few.
It's just weird because also FPS is not even your number one
it's
genre,
not.
Right?
No, it's not.
I think the issue is it's true that FPSs happen to be super seminal because they showcase iterative innovation first.
I often. Do really like first-person shooters. I've played a lot of them. I feel like I play all the big ones. Like, you know what I mean? I play all the big ones. Like, I just went through and played Dishonored, and I'm like, man, we got to talk
Here's
about that.
Here's the real litmus test. Did you finish Far Cry 6?
No, I hated it.
Yeah, then you're
I
not a real. I would say if you're truly addicted to the FPS, you would finish that monstrosity.
That wasn't fun. You know?
That was just a grind.
It just wasn't a fun game. I wanted to like it. I've liked a lot of Far Cry. I like Far Cry 3. We haven't talked about that game.
I like Breaking Bad. Don't at me.
me too. Yeah. I love Breaking Bad. I just didn't. I didn't like Far Cry 6.
Of course, I want to kill Gus Fring. How could you even ask?
And he's such a great actor. It was such a bummer.
I didn't even get deep enough into that game to like see him or interact with
him. No, I saw the one clip, and I was like, I bet he's awesome later in this game. But I'm not going to figure out which ammo kills a guy. Get the fuck out of here.
All ammo
kills a guy, bro. I'm not having this. It was so dumb. Anyway, that's not what this podcast is for. I think the world of Zen should celebrate tonight, right? That they are remembered. They have something to celebrate. And that weird alien space planet, don't they?
Whatever.
By the way, okay, I know you're
my spirit's
I know you're,
broken.
I know you're sad. I know you're sad. But real quick question: do you really believe this is a portal to another dimension, or that it's just space and time travel? Like, is this a multiverse, or is this?
Well, I believe it's represented. I believe it's presented as a portal to a hell dimension. Yeah,
but not hell. Like, just a different dimension.
Not the biblical hell. No, just a different dimension.
But
that
not
has
the
aliens
doom
in.
Hell either. Like, not any hell. It's just
no,
a different
just
dimension.
A dimension full of aliens that are not conducive to commingling with us.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. I just wanted to clarify
hellish.
That.
Hellishly bad
but
to
again,
interact with.
In a more grounded way. That's the thing that's so cool about this game.
Yeah, an alien planet. An actual alien planet.
That would be hell because of the things they are.
No connection.
Still not great. Hell, I don't want to go there.
Not related.
I don't want to go there, that's for sure.
And yet it's preferable to the void. Which we must now return you to, but not before we plug our shit. If you like this podcast quite a bit, consider checking out many, many other podcasts that we co-host in combination with a number of our other pals over at patreon.com/smallbeans. Otherwise, if you only care about the topic of video games and you're not here because of us, but just the husk, just the format itself, you can keep getting that sweet, sweet empty formatting. Just by staying subscribed or hitting up one-upsmanship wherever you get your podcasts, head over to something something and review.
Well,
my spirit.
You can review
my spirit.
And rate, which we appreciate. That gets people out of there. It also would buoy Mike's spirits. As you can see, he's very downtrodden.
Yeah, at Adam. That's what he likes.
If you're going to at me, I hate Half-Life. I'm going to say, hey, fine. History is against you, though.
That's true.
I'm sorry. History is against you, and I have a crowbar. You should be afraid of it.
Work complete.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, ah, yeah. Love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Tenor girl go shopping.
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my! Look at that! He is! And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win! Unbelievable!
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.